You are listening to Subjected. I'm your host, Justin Kerfman. Episode 1, Karel Zeman. In the autumn of 2012, I decided to travel alone to Prague from my then and current home in a little border town on the German side of the Austrian-German border. Very nearly, literally, a stone's throw from Salzburg. Part of my motivation to make the roughly 6-hour trip by train and by bus from Salzburg to Prague was, of course, simply to see and to experience what I had imagined to be, since my childhood, this beautifully mysterious, labyrinthine, and heavily textured city, seemingly bathed in syrupy black ink, wrapped in corroded sheets of hammer-beaten copper, and sheltered, finally, from a nebulous and encroachingly clammy gray sky, underneath a withered roof made of oxidized mantis green bronze. Another one of my motivating factors in visiting Prague, perhaps the greatest one, was birthed from my likely overexposure to many now-defunct late-night American television variety shows, such as the now probably nearly forgotten precursor to YouTube, known as Night Flight, as a result of extreme night terrors and insomnia that I suffered from throughout the first half of my life in my childhood home just outside of Atlanta, Georgia, back in the United States. These thrifty and largely ignored American television shows that seem to have vanished almost completely since the mid-1990s were often doused in what my Walt Disney and Warner Brothers fed eyes perceived at that time as a child of still single-digit age, as these what I felt to be incredibly cryptic and at times lewd and somewhat alien fragments of cinema, which utilized found objects, puppets, collage, incredibly unconventional drafting techniques, both subdued and sometimes gaudy color palettes, grunts, whistles, pops, growls, crackles, and rather challenging avant-garde music to what I found to be astonishing and often disturbing effect, as opposed to the, perhaps, in my opinion, more elegantly produced, sanitized, and mostly unambiguous work found in the American mainstream. In 1986, the RCA Electronics Corporation dissolved as a manufacturer of video cassette recorders. As a result, 2 years later, in 1988, my father bought for my small family, being he, my sister, my grandmother, and I, our first VCR. It was an RCA brand VCR on closeout liquidation with a bit of money that he had earned and stashed away from his relatively short tenure as a county employee at a public water department. I was 8 years old then, and I can still remember the first two films on VHS that my father, sister, and I rented together from a local video rental shop called Armchair Video, which went up in flames not long after our first visit, destroying a life-size RoboCop cardboard standee that I coveted strongly in the process. Those first two films included the nearly universally detested Troll, directed by John Paul Buchler, and the nearly universally praised version of The Fly, directed by David Cronenberg, both released in 1986.
Those weird hairs that were growing out of your back, I had them analyzed, but they were definitely not human.
It was with that shiny black plastic box filled with magnets, tiny rubber belts, plastic wheels and sprockets, and whirring slot car-like motors of assorted sizes that I began recording, rewinding, fast-forwarding, pausing, and studying these what I felt to be strange little films from a distant and slightly deviant world that I had captured onto videotape for my grandmother's now monolithic and quite hideous Curtis Mathis brand console television, encased in an unsightly cube fashioned from particle board and laminate wood. And as a result of my studies of these, what I felt to be as a young American boy, unusual films, I discovered that the majority of them were, without question, produced and distributed from this curious, faraway territory with a fascinatingly alien name that I was both unsure how to read and how to pronounce, that appeared somewhere, somehow, and in some fashion or another, in almost all of the film's title cards and credits as this place known as Chesko-Lovinsko, or as my father soon clarified for me in the English pronunciation, Czechoslovakia. And it was, generally speaking, from that point in time, in the mid-1980s, that my interest in animation, puppetry, literature, and the cinema of what was then Czechoslovakia and is now the Czech Republic, or Česká republika, began to develop. I have been deeply familiar with the names and the works of the likes of Jiří Barta, Lubomír Beneš, Stanislav Letal, Zdeněk Miller, Bratislav Polyar, and that of perhaps the incomparable Jan Švankmajer and Jiří Trnka, among many others both associated with Krátký film Praha and not for a little more than 20 years now. And it is because of that familiarity that I have with these artists in that era and in that location that I feel somewhat embarrassed to admit that it wasn't until, somehow, my first visit to Prague in November of 2012, while inside the walls of a rather charming and maybe even a little childlike museum, filled with what was for me a collection of exceptionally lush and palatable imagery and objects that I found in an alcove in Maya Strana next to Charles Bridge, called simply, in Czech, the Museum Karla Zimany, being somewhat of a refuge concerned solely with matters of imagination and invention that I became familiar with what appears to me to be the broadly ignored yet stellar and perhaps genuinely unparalleled work in terms of pure mid-20th century cinematic ingenuity of Karel Zeman. The name Karel Zeman no doubt means very little, if anything at all, to the ears and eyes of most people living outside of the Slavic language-speaking territories of the world. It may even be safe to say that the man and his work have been largely forgotten about even in his native land, despite having several international film festivals and exhibitions held posthumously in his honor over fairly recent years, including an extended screening at the Museum of Modern Art in New York in December 2012 as a part of an exhibition titled An Auteurist History of Film. It should perhaps also be said that Zeman's films have, unfortunately, not fared well within the home video market, suffering from rather shoddily produced, limitedly distributed, and sparsely promoted video cassettes and DVDs. There is also the occasionally and mostly avoided television broadcast of what I feel to be Zeman's weakest and most unflatteringly dated feature-length film, in our post-Jurassic Park world titled, in its English translation, Journey to the Beginning of Time from 1955, whose popularity, and I am using that word in a very generous sense, has, in my opinion, tragically branded the man in the popular consciousness as nothing more than a contributor to the junk heap of lousy dinosaur-themed movies that have plagued theaters more or less since the invention of cinema. And it is, I believe, a real shame that the bulk of this brilliantly clever and masterfully inventive artist's work, particularly the film's Inspiration from 1948, The Fabulous World of Jules Verne from 1958, The Fabulous Baron Munchausen from 1961, and Krabat, The Sorcerer's Apprentice from 1977, all of which I will be focusing on here, have been, fundamentally, lost in the shadows of a woolly mammoth mock-up and the sensibility of today's movie audiences in general, are more apt to respond to with a snicker and an elbow to their neighbor's ribs, as opposed to a sense and an expression of wonderment and awe that I feel can still, to this day, even within the most jaded and desensitized circles of both film aficionados and weekend moviegoers, be conjured. Karel Zeman was born on November 3, 1910, in Ostromer, a very small village of approximately 1,000 people in what was that time Austria-Hungary, where he, since his early childhood, had a special adoration and interest for puppetry and theater. After graduating high school in Kolin, a town just east of Prague, at age 17, Simon left his home in Ostromer in response to a local newspaper advertisement to study at an advertising school in Aix-en-Provence in the south of France, where he also soon found employment at an advertising studio in Marsal until 1936. It was during his education and employment in France that Simon frequented a nearby cinema and became particularly interested in animation. Simon's first professional working experience in animation and special effect photography was during the production of an advertising spot for a now-defunct soap company. From there, Simon's interest in advertising quickly waned and focused instead on puppetry and animation proper. Simon then left France to travel rather extensively through Morocco, Egypt, Yugoslavia, and Greece, both for pleasure and as a part of his required military service. In 1939, Simon returned to his home, which had become, during his absence, Czechoslovakia, where he worked as a teacher at a window dressing school, which was owned by the Bata Shoe Company in the city of Zlín. Simon had also taken a job at around the same time as a member of the advertising department of Tatra, a Czech automotive manufacturer. Soon thereafter, Simon began working as the chief of advertising at a large department store in the city of Brno. In 1943, Czech animator and filmmaker Elmar Klos, who would later go on along with his collaborator of 17 years, Jan Kadar, win the 1965 Oscar for Best Foreign Language Film for the film The Shop on Main Street, was sent by his then-employer to write a report concerning a window-dressing competition in Brno, which Simon had won first place. Taking advantage of the opportunity, Simon presented a sampling of his animation work to Klos during his visit. Klos was so impressed with Simon's work that he immediately offered him a position at the Bata Film Studios in Zlín, as an assistant to the highly esteemed Hermína Tyrilová, often referred to as the mother of Czech animation. Just 2 years later, in 1945, Simon became the director of the studio's stop-motion animation production department, and went on to release that same year, in collaboration with his brother, Borivaj, his first short film, A Christmas Dream, which would go on to win the award for Best Animation at the Cannes Film Festival in 1946. A Christmas Dream was then purchased for theatrical distribution in the United States by Universal Pictures in 1948, and for early home 16mm and 8mm projection units in both silent and sound versions by Castle Films in 1949. Following the success of A Christmas Dream, Simon went on to direct a consistent output of 10 more short films until 1950, concluding with his Czech National Award-winning 30-minute adaptation of the poem King Lavra by Karel Havlicek Borovsky, although perhaps the most notable short film that Simon produced between 1946 and 1950 was his 11-minute Ode to Inspiration, made almost entirely with stop-motion animated glass, titled simply Inspiration, from 1948, in which a listless glassblower finds inspiration in a drop of water. Inspiration should be seen, in my opinion, as Simon's first true breakthrough film, a precursor to what would soon come to be his trademark stamp of pure inventiveness and cinematic trickery, for which he would soon come to be known for. In 1952, Simon released his first feature-length animated film, the largely ignored The Treasure of Bird Island. I must admit that The Treasure of Bird Island was likely panned because of its rather derivative nature, intentional or not, from the already well-established and beloved work of possibly the first true Czech stop-motion animation master, Jiří Trnka. The Treasure of Bird Island is not, I feel, a true representation of what Zeman would show himself to be capable of in the coming few years. The world of pure stop-motion animated puppet films was not, I feel can be said with some confidence, Zeman's strength. Zeman's true talents would show themselves in a type of cinema on a much grander scope. He would soon show himself to be, I feel, less akin to what would come to be known as the Czech animation tradition, and more akin to a tradition of cinematic wizardry with a much more exclusive club membership, including that of the inarguable founding member, Georges Méliès, and his lesser-known but equally capable Spanish peer and rival, Segundo de Chamon. Zeman's first popularly successful feature-length film, Journey to the Beginning of Time, was released in 1955 to much international acclaim and astonishment in terms of special effects, winning several international festival awards. Journey to the Beginning of Time was also noted for its, at that time, rather unconventional documentary-style approach, depicting prehistoric animal life in their natural environments, displaying their natural behavior ultimately for the educational purposes of children rather than for pure entertainment. Then, in 1958, what would arguably become Zeman's cinematic masterpiece was released, The Fabulous World of Jules Verne. The Fabulous World of Jules Verne, also known as An Invitation for Destruction, a title which I personally prefer, is based primarily on Verne's 1896 novel Facing the Flag, featuring the character Thomas Roch, which many film and literary historians believe to be the original basis for the mad scientist archetype that is generally recognized in popular culture today. Additionally, and perhaps most importantly in Zeman's case, Facing the Flag was illustrated heavily throughout with Victorian-era line engravings by French artist Léon Bennett, which Zeman used extensively for image reference, inspiration, and as a focal point for emulation in the film. It is, I feel, here that we see Zeman for the first time in his career truly firing on all of his creative cylinders to create a film that was, quite easily, I believe, and not unprecedented in terms of its unconventionality by maybe The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari in 1920 or Metropolis from 1927, then certainly what we have here, I think, is a piece of cinema that was, in its time, quite definitely unparalleled. There is, to my knowledge, no other film produced up until maybe Zeman's own The Fabulous Baron Munchausen in 1961 that so fluidly and in such a timeless manner manages to integrate all manner of then-known and developing purely organic pre-digital trickery in such an aesthetically commendatory way. Nearly every single frame of film in The Fabulous World of Jules Verne either displays or combines some form of double or even triple exposure technique, painted on glass animation, etching, cutout animation, stop motion animation, puppetry, illusions of perspective and anamorphosis, set miniatures and models, matte paintings in multiple styles and disciplines, rudimentary animatronics, film tinting, smoke manipulation, silhouette animation, and more. Sometimes all at once, and all of it integrated into one relatively seamless whole, with live-action actors on both sound stages and exterior set locations. I find the film to be a genuinely marvelous visual triumph of human ingenuity, where the presence of dialogue and even a music track to some degree is a mere triviality. The Fabulous World of Jules Verne became the most successful Czech film of all time. Not being particularly interested in the Baron Munchausen mythos, my desire to move deeper into Carl Zeman's feature film catalog beyond that of The Fabulous World of Jules Verne was admittedly stifled when I discovered that his next film was released in 1961, bore the title The Fabulous Baron Munchausen. I was reluctant to view the film out of fear of spoiling my admiration for the small portion of Zeman's work that I had already become familiar with. I couldn't imagine the existence of any single filmmaker since the invention of cinema short of Terry Gilliam in his 1988 film, The Adventures of Baron Munchausen, having the ability to craft a film around the character of Baron Munchausen that I could force myself to be even remotely interested in seeing. I was wrong. The opening scene of Karel Zeman's The Fabulous Baron Munchausen is awash in what I find to be this incredibly rich and spectral, yet incredibly limited color palette, not unlike Vincent van Gogh's characteristic representation of the night sky in his divine cobalt blues and evidently delicious chrome yellows. And for Zeman to place this color palette within the context of an astronaut's ascension from the Earth to the Moon, where he is greeted, rather absurdly, by none other than Cyrano de Bergerac, Barrican un Captain Nicole from the Jules Verne novel, From the Earth to the Moon, a grazing horse, and of course Baron Munchausen himself, proves to me that beauty, just like blood, can be squeezed out of any turnip if placed in capable hands. The unlikely permutation of characters, environments, music, cinematography techniques, trick photography, animation, and for me, most of all, in The Fabulous Baron Munchausen, color provides an entirely different yet complementary visual experience from that which is found in the high contrast black and white world seemingly composed from the ground up of hair-thin horizontal pinstripes found in The Fabulous World of Jules Verne. For that reason, I feel that I can't rightfully compare the two films to one another. I feel that each one of the two occupies a similar but incredibly distinctive cinematic space, in which on the one hand we have The Fabulous World of Jules Verne, which is this nearly totally fabricated cinematic oddity called from within a literally black and white steam-powered world inspired by a diabetic French novelist whose name is still curiously, I find, to this day, more than 100 years after his death, the most popularly recognized name in science fiction literature, even though his works are not nearly as widely read in this century as they were in the last. And then, on the other hand, we have The Fabulous Baron Munchausen, which is, for me, such a celebration of color, absurdism, tactile adroitness, and childishness, in the most positive sense of the word, that it borders on the verge of masturbatory, which is, in my opinion, the true essence of art that we are left with when one decides to strip away all of the baggage of theory, philosophy, and any number of isms, and those terrible burdens of utility, finance, and most modern definitions of the word success. Straying from Jules Verne's fiction as source material, Zeman released his fifth feature-length film, A Jester's Tale, in 1964. An anti-war black comedy set during the Thirty Years' War using the work of 17th century Swiss engraver Matthias Merian for visual inspiration. And though quite a feat unto itself, I feel, especially when one considers the masterful integration of Zeman's expansive exterior shots with minute and incredibly precise in-camera masking techniques, I must admit that I believe that it is from this point, coming off of the astonishingly high watermark that Zeman set for himself after the release of The Fabulous Baron Munchausen, that Karel Zeman's work begins to lose something, its novelty, or vicissitude, perhaps. That certainly doesn't mean that I believe that Zeman's later films are grossly inferior works when compared to The Fabulous World of Jules Verne or The Fabulous Baron Munchausen. In fact, I find The Stolen Airship from 1967 and On the Comet from 1970, to be quite admirable as well. But there is something about Zeman's work following the release of The Fabulous Baron Munchausen in 1961 that doesn't quite captivate me. There is something amiss to me about Zeman's cinematography post-1961. His framing becomes, I think, too loose. The actors become too natural for their own good. And there is something for me, something very unflattering in the general development of cinema technology in this period that doesn't harmonize with Zeman's visual sensibilities. In 1971, Zeman released a 14-minute cutout animation short film titled The Adventures of Sinbad the Sailor, which would mark his permanent departure from live-action filmmaking due probably to his advancing age and growing problems with sight. Zeman worked in close collaboration with his daughter Ludmila, then in her early 20s, on a series of 7 total short cutout animation films using the character of Sinbad as a theme, which were collected together and released as an animated feature film in 1974 as Tales of 1001 Nights. 3 years later, Krabat, The Sorcerer's Apprentice, adapted from the 1971 novel Krabat by German author Ottfried Preußler, was released. Krabat, The Sorcerer's Apprentice, was another feature-length animated film utilizing the cutout animation technique in collaboration with Ludmila Zeman, his daughter. And I feel that of all of Karel Zeman's animated films following his departure from live-action filmmaking, including his final feature film, The Tale of John and Mary, released in 1980, Krabat, The Sorcerer's Apprentice, is easily his most accomplished. It might even be accurate to say that considering that the bulk of Zeman's output, if not all of it, was created first and foremost for children, and therefore carries with it a fairly consistently whimsical tone, Krabat, The Sorcerer's Apprentice, is to me Zeman's most melancholy entry into his rather large and usually quite playful body of work. With its amalgamation of themes of slavery, love, death, friendship, and evil, as well as the inclusion of an occasion for the annual massacring of male children on Christmas Day at the hands of a master practitioner of black magic. Karel Zeman died in Zlin on April 5, 1989, shortly before the Velvet Revolution, whose 23rd anniversary celebration I happened to be present for on Vyšehradská Square in Prague, where he left behind what I feel to be a remarkably dynamic and truly innovative filmography consisting of 10 features, 13 shorts, and assorted advertising spots. He is survived by his daughter Ludmila Zeman, who is an accomplished filmmaker, author, and illustrator in her own right, having created animated works for Sesame Street, a short film titled Lord of the Sky, which was commissioned by the National Film Board of Canada and shortlisted for an Oscar in 1992. Currently, Ludmila is working on a new picture book based on her father's film The Fabulous Baron Munchausen, among other works, all of which you can learn more about at ludmilazeman.com, spelled ludmilazeman.com. If you are interested in seeing the work of Karel Zeman for the first time, or again perhaps, I suggest that you do so in its most respectfully available manner at present, that being a trilogy of DVDs produced by and available exclusively from the Karel Zeman Museum in Prague. Included in the trilogy are Journey to the Beginning of Time, The Fabulous World of Jules Verne, and The Fabulous Baron Munchausen, whose digitization was supervised by Ludmila Zeman from the original film stock. I watched the DVDs myself while inside the Karel Zeman Museum in Prague in November 2012 and found the quality of the transfers to be stunning, particularly the fabulous world of Jules Verne. This DVD trilogy is available now at museumcarlazemana.cz. That is museumcarlazemana.cz. museumcarlazemana.cz. The official website for the museum. These DVDs are available for less than 10 euros or 10 American dollars via PayPal, and they ship worldwide. You have been listening to a Tefra Media production of Subjected, copyright 2013 by Justin Kerfman and Tefra Media Publishing, all rights reserved. You may subscribe to this program and purchase transcripts at justinkerfman.com. Thank you for listening.